It's the Joy Cardine Show, and I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy this hour on the Ideas Network. It is 6:08, and do you know where your tea is? Unopened in your cupboard is not the right answer. The tea business is booming. A new survey of 1,700 registered dietitians finds that green tea makes the list of the top 10 up-and-coming superfoods of 2017, and ready-to-drink teas are apparently poised for the biggest growth. Mary Lou Heiss is here to help us understand this tea trend and whether it's here to stay. She owns Tea Trekker. It's an online tea importer and retailer. She also co-authored the book, The Tea Enthusiast's Handbook, A Guide to Enjoying the World's Best Teas. Mary Lou, good morning. Welcome to the show and happy Hot Tea Month.
Well, thank you very much, Kate. I'm thrilled to be here and happy New Year.
Well, we were inspired to do this show in part because of a survey of the dietitians that included green tea as a superfood this year. What's your reaction?
Well, I'm not surprised because green tea has been kind of a hot commodity for the last 10 years. It went out of the media conversation a few years back. It kind of simmered down, but for a while, everything was all about green tea. It was exciting and thrilling, but it really left all the rest of the teas out of the conversation because everybody was just all about green tea. So it kind of simmered down, and we've noticed since then that our customers have, you know, started to explore black teas and oolong teas and other types of tea. So now the green tea has kind of roared back up to the top. It will be interesting to see how this shapes the conversation and the education about various teas. Green tea does seem to have some of the greatest percentage of antioxidants in the world of the different types of tea, although I do have to say that all tea has antioxidants. So it isn't just that green tea by itself is alone in that statistic. It's, perhaps a few percentage points higher than the rest. But true tea, because it comes from the same basic plant, and that therefore one is working with the same raw materials in the tea factories, no matter what kind of tea one is making, the actual components remain similar.
And so tea is growing in popularity. Why do you think that is? What do you make of this comeback?
Well, I think part of it is that it's offering something new and fresh tasting to a lot of folks who've really never been tea drinkers. I know that there are folks out there who their whole life have drunk tea and other people who have shied away from it because, you know, they think of it as what grandma gave them when they were sick, and they don't necessarily have this fabulous association with tea. So I think now that there are so many different types of tea in the marketplace, people are having it's positioning itself differently, and people are having a look at it and realizing, you know, tea is actually very tasty, and it's delightfully aromatic. It's a clean, light beverage, which is perfect for a lot of people's food preferences these days. It's flexible. You can drink it plain, or you can drink it with milk or a milk substitute and a sweetener of your choice if that's how you like it. It's easy to steep. You can steep tea in a teapot. God knows almost everything in the world comes in a tea bag these days. And you can, if you really wanted to get involved in tea steeping, one can follow the steeping methodologies as developed hundreds of years ago in the Asian tea-producing countries, China, Japan, Korea. And these methodologies are different than how we steep tea in the West, and they're deemed by Asian aficionados to bring out the best flavor and character of the tea. So one can get into the tea culture aspect of it, the tea wares aspect of it, the tea itself aspect of it. So it's kind of a new, wide-open discussion for a lot of people.
Well, let's talk about access to tea. Apparently trade with China changing. Getting tea is actually easier now. From your vantage in retail and importing tea, how has this opened up new access to tea?
Well, you know, for a number of years, we've sold tea now for 40 years, and I'd say for probably 25 of those 40 years, we really just had a small selection of very, what now we would call uninspired teas. But that was all one could get. There just wasn't much happening in the world of exotic teas. When trade started to change with China, you know, after the Nixon era, we were invited by one of our tea vendors to go to China to see what was happening with tea and see what we could all, band up together and source directly. And we were astonished by these tea factories that we visited, these small tea factories in village locations in the mountains where people have been making tea, crafting tea by hand in the same manner for hundreds of years. And these teas were completely unknown to us or anybody else in the United States, green teas, black teas, oolong teas, all the fabulous teas that now, you know, are pretty easy to buy in the marketplace. So about that time, it just slowly started to filter, the information started to filter to those of us in the tea trade that there were these great opportunities to have amazing teas from China, teas that nobody else ever had. So we started to do that, visited China many times, sourcing our teas all over the country of China for different teas, started to go to Japan, went to Korea, have yet to go to Nepal, but that's on our list. So all of these teas, as they come forward into the marketplace, offer something different, offer something unique, and they really match today's interest that a lot of people have, which is in things like authenticity, handmade, these wonderful teas that are just, it opens people's minds to this conversation about something that they had previously only envisioned as, you know, a little bit of broken tea dangling in a tea bag.
Mm. We're talking with Mary Lou Heiss. She is a tea aficionado and owner of Tea Trekker. That's an online premium tea importer and vendor. Mary Lou, beyond green tea, what are the other types of teas that people are drinking, that they're embracing?
Well, America and Europe, for their entire tea drinking history, has primarily been black tea drinking nations. That's what most people in America think of as tea. It's what most people in America have drunk, you know, growing up, if they've grown up in a tea drinking family. So besides black tea, you know, now of course green tea has come roaring to the front. There's a very small amount of tea made in eastern China, which is called yellow tea. It's perhaps the easiest way to describe it is to say it's a variant of green tea. There's not very much of it made anymore, but there is still a little bit, and we do have it every year. White tea. There's a whole family of oolong teas that are spectacular and interesting and very compelling. And then there's another family of tea called Heicha, which are the fermented teas, and that includes Pu'er, which is a tea from western China that a lot of people are starting to become interested in because it comes in really interesting shapes and sizes, and it just has extraordinary stories behind it with ethnic people who produce these teas in these remote mountain areas. So there are six classes of tea now that people can really choose from to find the tea that is particularly right for them, or to just give them something new to try every time.
We're getting a lot of activity here on Facebook, people talking about how they like their tea. Patrick says, I like strong tea and spicy chai tea. I just hate waiting for it to steep and then cleaning the teapot, French press, or tea ball afterwards. Chai tea, Mary Lou, how spicy chai tea, is that a particular taste?
It is, although it differs. Chai originates from India. And in India, particularly in the north to the central part of India, almost every different state, every different region has a different spice mix that they use with their black tea. You know, you have to think of India as a country that for so long was under British rule, colonial rule, that much of the kind of tea that they produce are black teas produced for export, and then some teas that are produced for internal Indian folks tea drinking. The chai teas came about, I think, a little bit kind of bridge the gap between both of those reasons. And you get these strong black teas with these very interesting, very tasty, very aromatic spice mixes, which will be wildly different one to another. We've never been, but I've seen photographs and I've talked with colleagues who have been. And, you know, apparently even as you're running to get on the train, there are tea chai wallas set up outside the train with their, you know, pots of tea and their little clay cups, and, you know, people are handing off cups to one another. They're running from the train, running to the train. So it's a very popular, everyday kind of satisfying tea drink.
And what about herbal teas? How do they fit into the tea lineup?
Well, herbal teas are not traditional teas, and by that I mean traditional teas, pure tea, comes from the Camellia sinensis tea bush and its cultivars and its variants. It has caffeine and it has antioxidants and it has a lot of other components that define Camellia sinensis. Herbal teas are made from everything but that. They can be made from flowers like lavender buds or rose petals. They can be made from roots. They can be made from stems. They can be made from seeds. They can be made from blends of those ingredients. So they don't have caffeine. They are drunk hot or iced, as tea is, and we find with our customers, they often are a way in which young people begin to drink tea. You know, they're kind of naturally sweet. They're light. They're lovely to look at if they're a nice-looking blend. And, you know, from there, people sometimes graduate over into traditional tea.
They're a gateway to tea.
I think so. That's a good way to put it. I think so.
We're talking with tea expert Mary Lou Heiss about the rising interest among Americans to drink it, bottled, loose, in bags, you name it. Here's what we know from the financial firm MarketWatch. Tea was a $14.5 billion industry last year. It's expected to grow to more than $21 billion by 2024. Are you in on the tea craze? Do you prefer tea over coffee? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. News is next. This is the Joy Cardine Show. It's 6:23 on this Tuesday. Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy this hour. Have you had tea lately? Maybe you're drinking it right now. Major tea companies like Nestea are primed to capitalize on our growing taste for tea. Nestea is launching two new tea lines this year, targeting its push toward millennials. Our guest, Mary Lou Heiss, is helping us understand this big movement toward tea. She's written the Tea Enthusiast's Handbook, a guide to enjoying the world's best teas. She owns Tea Trekker, an online tea import business. Mary Lou, tell us a little bit about the benefits of drinking tea, and also with green tea being listed as this superfood, what it might be telling us about our diets.
Well, I think that the reason that folks gravitate towards tea is that it does make the list of foods that have a high percentage of antioxidants. And antioxidants are what are being researched for potential healthful benefits or healing properties. In Asia, tea is often talked about as something which nourishes the qi, which is Q-I or C-H-I. And qi is this natural vital force that flows through all of our bodies. And your qi needs to be kept in good health or you're not going to be a healthy individual. So it's believed that tea helps to keep your qi in check. There are also concepts in Asia like tea is medicine. These are unproven, of course, but a lot of this Asian belief is what's filtered over to the United States and began, I think, the looking at tea in terms of, you know, what true concrete healthful benefits might it have. You know, none of this is yet proven. It's still hopeful, but it's still mostly anecdotal. But it is interesting to see what researchers are looking at. You know, part of which is comparing, are there more antioxidants in green tea and black tea, or do they just differ? And they do indeed differ. The kind of antioxidants that develop during the manufacturing process of different teas are not the same. Although we tell our customers, it's really not worth getting too worried about the percentage differences that may exist, because all tea is healthy. All real tea, true tea, has percentage of antioxidants. We tend to look at tea more from the point of view of taste, style, and cultural specificity. So healthful benefits is not really our area of expertise. You know, we are aware of what's going on. But as far as I'm aware, there's still no concrete evidence. Everything is still in the hopeful anecdotal state.
Let's take a caller, Terry from Abbotsford. Terry, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. How do you like your tea?
I like black tea with some honey. My question is, why is it only green tea that is considered good for you? I think you sort of answered that. I have tried green tea in every way possible, and I do not like it.
Mm-hmm. We hear this often from customers, and, you know, the truth is, all tea has some healthful benefits for you. So we tell our customers, drink the tea that you like. You know, you're not going to drink something that you don't like. So it doesn't work to just try to make yourself drink green tea if you're not a green tea lover. So your black tea is fine for you. It may have slightly less antioxidants than the green tea. But, you know, we're talking about a difference that only makes a difference in a perfect world. We don't eat perfect diets. You know, we aren't perfect people. So the small percentage difference between green tea and black tea is, you know, not that big a deal. So that's really our take on it, is drink the tea that you like, maybe not add so much milk. You know, milk has been suspected to encapsulate the antioxidants and make them less bioavailable, which means your body can't really absorb them. I don't know if that's been looked at further. I don't know if that's true. But if you can hold down the milk rather than, you know, really load it up with, you know, yummy cream, you might be slightly better off than if you do that. But, you know, drink your black tea. Embrace your black tea. Be proud of your black tea.
Thank you so much, Terry. Appreciate it. John from Boaz called in, couldn't stay with us, but he wanted to know, Mary Lou, if coffee has more caffeine than tea. What do we know about the caffeine?
Well, caffeine is a funny animal because the amount of caffeine, I don't know as much about caffeine percentages in coffee as I do in tea, but caffeine percentage in tea varies by a lot of conditions. It varies by what kind of tea leaf one has plucked. Has one plucked a very early spring leaf, which is tiny and going to be full of caffeine? Has one plucked a later spring leaf, which will be a little bit bigger in size because the leaf has grown and therefore the caffeine has spread throughout and you're going to have more volume of leaf to percentage of caffeine? So there's all kinds of reasons why caffeine varies in tea. Some tea has more caffeine than coffee, which is something most people don't read about very often. But what tea does have, which is a great thing that helps people not have to feel like, well, why should I stop drinking coffee? You know, it makes me jittery, but I am just going to start to drink tea and I'll be just as jittery. You won't be. And the reason that you won't be is because tea contains an amino acid that coffee does not have, and that amino acid is called theanine or theanine. And it has the effect of, in a sense, neutralizing the way that caffeine affects our bodies. Theanine is used in studies of psychological studies where people's brain waves are being tested and looked at, and it always calms people during these tests. So theanine, with its ability to reduce the effects of caffeine, is partly why people can drink a lot. Most people can drink a fair amount of tea and not get jittery, not get buzzy. They report things like, I feel focused, I feel clear-headed, I feel calm. You know, it's a very different effect than coffee. So even though tea may have in the chemistry sometimes a little bit more caffeine, the effects on the human body is much, much reduced.
We're talking with Mary Lou Heiss. She is a tea expert and owner of Tea Trekker, which is an online premium tea importer and vendor. Mary Lou, let's talk about brewing the perfect cup of tea. Walk us through the stages and how we get the temperature right. First, start us out on the tea to use and temperature and where we go from there.
Okay. Again, it's an answer that has to do with what kind of tea one has. And I don't mean whether you have loose leaf or tea leaf, although that comes into play a little bit as well. But it's really what, you know, kind of tea you have. Do you have black tea? Do you have green tea? Do you have oolong tea? We have a whole chart that we created that explains to customers about water temperatures, and usually the steeping time is about the same, which is, you know, we kind of say a general 2 minutes for most tea, 1 to 2 minutes. But it's the water temperature that we find really makes a difference. So, for example, with green teas, Chinese and Japanese, you really want to use a cool water temperature, about 175 to 185 degrees. So you can bring your tea to a boil and then let it sit for a couple of minutes. If you have one of those InstaReath thermometers, those are great because you can plunge it in the water and get your reading. Some people are very fastidious about this. Other people, it's just all kind of random. But if you do use cooler water, you will get a better result. You will get better flavor from your green tea.
Really?
Also from white tea and yellow tea, you can ramp that temperature up about 5 degrees for each of those. You know, and you ramp up the temperature as the tea becomes darker in color, as the tea is more oxidized. What's happening with the tea leaves is that different teas are, even though each tea goes through its own steps of manufacturing in the tea factory, one of the things that some tea is subjected to is oxidation. Other teas are not. For example, green teas are not oxidized. Yellow teas are not oxidized. White tea has slight oxidation. Oolong tea has medium oxidation. Black teas have full oxidation. And hecha, that category of fermented tea, they can often have full oxidation. So the darker the tea is, if you're looking at, say you're looking at 6 different dishes of loose leaf tea, the colors that you see are represented by how much oxidation the tea has had. So the more oxidation the tea has had, the hotter the water it can take in the steeping, which is why people always say use boiling water for black tea. We don't really say that. We say bring it to a boil and let it sit for a minute. For black tea, you could still burn it with water that's too hot. We say 195 to 205, which is just under a boil. But that will give you better black tea flavor than the water temperature that you might use for your green tea. So water temperature is of primary importance. Not oversteeping is also of primary importance. That's something that a lot of people do, particularly folks who are used to drinking black tea, which you can steep for about 5 minutes. If you do that with most green teas, it's really not going to taste very good. Green tea, you want about a minute, maybe 2 minutes tops. And there are so many different kinds of green teas out there. Chinese greens will react differently than Japanese greens in the steeping. So
it can get really complicated.
it could take a little bit of trial and error. I wish tea were sometimes more of a simple answer kind of topic, but it's not. So, which is why I think some people just go back to tea bags because they just don't want to do all this. Other folks become really enamored with the whole reason behind everything, you know, and they really get into it. And you know, we get these emails from customers about, you know, I did this and I did that. And when I did this, wow, it was great. And when I did that, ooh, it wasn't very good at all. You know, so for some people, that's fun. For the, if you cook,
right,
and you like to spend time in your kitchen trying this and that and experimenting, then, you know, tea has so much option for people to do that. If you really don't want to do that, that's fine. But the one thing that it's helpful to respect are the water temperatures.
We're talking with tea expert Mary Lou Heiss about the myriad ways you can take your tea and where it comes from. She's the owner of Tea Trekker, an online premium tea importer and vendor. We'd love to hear from you. How do you take your tea? Have you tried tea but didn't love it? And what was your experience like? What is your favorite type of tea? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mary Lou, you touched on this briefly, but when sometimes you take some tea, especially green tea, it can have a bitter aftertaste. Where does this come from, and is there a way of reversing that or changing the aftertaste with tea?
Green tea should actually not have a bitter taste. When we hear that from customers, we ask, you know, what water temperature are you using? Often people are using water that's too hot, and that is one of the things that will happen. The tea will become bitter. We're asking people how long are you steeping it. If you're steeping it for 5, 6, 7 minutes, the tea will become bitter. If you're doing both of those, the tea's going to be very bitter. So part of it is the execution of what one is doing. You know, green tea is low temperature, short steep. And for some people, that just doesn't yield a hot enough cup of tea, and they're just never satisfied. Or they just can't hit that sweet spot, literally, where the tea has a sweetness to it. Sometimes green teas are a little bitter. Japanese senchas are, by their nature, a little bit more bitter tasting than Chinese green teas, which tend to be sweet. But the bitterness is still, it's more of an astringency and a pleasant bite than it is true bitterness. The other thing, I have to say this, that comes into play is the quality of the tea. You know, one is just not going to get fabulous green tea in the supermarket or in a tea bag. It just isn't. It isn't going to do it. So it has to do as well with what you're using, how old what you're using is. If you've had it in your cupboard for 5 years already, green tea lasts at best a year.
Oh.
You know, it's a season-to-season product. Every green tea in China and Japan is made in the spring, only in the spring. Well, not only in the spring, but the best teas are made only in the spring for about 3 to 4 weeks. After that, one gets into, you know, lesser grades of tea. But the really fine teas are made for a short period of time, and they're only made during those weeks. If the weather's bad, it's just how it goes. You know, they don't have much tea that season. If the weather's phenomenal, they might have a bountiful yield. But that tea won't be made, those teas won't be made again until the following spring. So green tea is very seasonal that way. So if you have tea that's already 5 years old, it's, you know, not really going to be worth steeping because you aren't really going to have much flavor left in that.
And even though you it's painful to dispose of it, throw it away, really your taste is going to be in jeopardy if it's expired.
Right, exactly.
Well, let's take a caller, James from Kimberly. Hi, James.
Hello.
How do you take your tea?
Well, I don't drink much tea just for drinking the tea. I drink tea by making my own kombucha with black tea. I ferment it over about 7 to 8 days and then do a second fermentation and some bottles for another 3. And so I get all the probiotic effects of the tea with the sugar.
So that's how I drink my tea.
Mary Lou, how about this method? Can you say
kombucha.
That? Kombucha. Yeah.
Kombucha. Believe it or not, I have never had kombucha, and I don't really know very much about it. You know, again, it's not the direction that we travel in regarding tea, although I do know that kombucha has become very popular. I've seen online many articles in magazines on how to make your own and what to do, and I know that now when you're looking in the supermarket or the convenience store in a refrigerated case of bottled beverages, at least in my area, Western Massachusetts, there are many choices of bottled kombucha, you know, those 16-ounce bottles that one can buy. So it's becoming popular, and it's becoming known. We're just kind of in the dark ages about it because it's not really, you know, the tea that we gravitate around.
James, how did you come upon kombucha and how to make it?
I came upon kombucha just from seeing it in the stores. And then I went out and started researching online and realized that I can make it myself, and it's so much cheaper to do it that way. So then we just started doing that, my wife and I, and we love it. It has tons of health benefits to it. So that, you know, we drink tea anyways, but then we started doing the kombucha because I didn't want to drink soda anymore. And you get with that second fermentation and the sugar in the tea, it gives it a fizzy. So it's kind of like soda, but better.
James, what kind of tea do you use for your kombucha? I know people
I use black.
Okay.
Yeah, black.
I think that's the most popular.
It kind of depends. We use different kinds of black. It always depends on just what we buy.
Yeah.
Well, James, thank you so much for your call. Marcia on Facebook says a perfect cup of tea is very subjective. Tea is her favorite beverage all day, every day, and she likes the builder's tea with absolutely no sweetener, no milk, lemon flavorings, or anything else tainting it. And she asks, is that anyone else's perfect cup? She doubts it, but how about you? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Mary Lou, what do you think about just taking tea without adding anything to it?
Oh, I think a lot of people do that. And I think people are doing it more and more because I think folks are realizing, and we saw this happening with coffee a number of years ago, a dozen, 15 years ago, you know, the notion that you're not really getting the true taste of the product, you're not getting the true taste of coffee if you're loading it up with milk and sugar. And tea is even truer to that convention because tea is a more delicate flavor. So the more you add to a cup of tea, the less of the tea flavor you're actually getting. So I think people are realizing that. They're backing off on the dairy. I think it's something that younger people who don't have a history of tea drinking, maybe I should say it that way, age irrelevant. People who are new to tea drinking are a little bit more willing to be experimental. People who have been drinking their favorite tea the same way for lots of years really aren't going to change. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to change. And they shouldn't have to change. You know, if they're enjoying what they drink, that's really the bottom line. But folks who are new to tea are reading about where teas come from, so they have this whole new palette of, oh, I want to try Chinese tea, oh, I want to try Japanese tea, oh, I want to try Taiwan tea. And then they learn a little bit more. You know, we live now in a very cultural world. You know, people are learning how it's steeped in those countries, what kind of tea wares they use. So people want to explore that. They want to share that all that information with their friends. They want to know more about where the tea's grown and who's growing it and, you know, this whole new sense of transparency. So I think that when people start to look at tea that way, they decide, I'm just going to drink it plain. And you would never have dairy served in tea in China. You would never have dairy in any of the Asian countries. It's only really in the countries that make black tea, India, Sri Lanka, Africa, maybe parts of Nepal. You know, the countries that make black tea are the countries where you would probably be served tea with milk. But any country that makes oolong or green tea, no milk, no dairy, just plain.
We've been learning about America's passion for tea with Mary Lou Heiss. She owns Tea Trucker, an online premium tea importer and vendor. How do you like your tea routine? Call us at 800-642-1234. News is next. Good morning. You're listening to The Joy Cardine Show, and I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy this hour. We're learning about America's love for tea. We know that tea has been grown in the U.S. since the 1700s. but it's never really taken off as a crop. There are a scattered few small tea farms around the country, some in Hawaii, handful in South Carolina. But domestic production is so small that the U.S. doesn't even show up on the list of tea-producing nations. Where does your tea come from? How do you like it? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Mary Lou Heiss stays with us as our expert guide to the teas of the world. She owns online tea import business Tea Trekker. Mary Lou, tell us about where tea is grown, where it comes from, and the climate it needs to grow.
Oh, goodness. Tea is now grown in over 44 countries of the world. It's relatively shocking to see all of the places where tea comes from now. But a lot of the tea is not able to be purchased by itself. In other words, tea from certain African countries, one is never going to see it in this country sold as a single tea from that country because they go into blends, large commercial blends and commercial uses. The countries that produce tea, that have been producing tea the longest are the Asian countries, China, Korea, Japan. Then one moves to India, Taiwan, Sri Lanka. These are the traditional, original, I'm going to say, countries for tea production. From those countries, tea in the 20th century has really moved into Africa, into South America, countries, Iran, Iraq, although they're not as new as a lot of the African countries. But tea is now grown in a phenomenal number of countries, and it's almost hard to keep up with. A lot of these countries are producing commercial-grade tea. They're from newly planted tea gardens that are about quick turnover, not plucked by hand, not made by hand the way they are in most of the Asian countries. They are sheared quickly with machines, processed quickly. It's a quick-in, quick-out product. It's all about volume. It's not really about quality.
And what do we know about tea grown in the U.S.? Is it possible?
Well, there are companies trying to do this, mostly in the Pacific Northwest. There is a fellow down, I think, on an island in South Carolina, which took over an old Lipton or research center. And I think the problem with why tea is not developed very much in this country is that the interest in tea has only really spiked in the last 15 years, and that's not really enough time to plant enough tea plants to get to the point where one would need to harvest a sizable yield. When we visit tea gardens in Asia, they can be quite large. They're not necessarily like what you see in pictures of tea gardens in India. You don't look at this blanketed area that's like a carpet of, you know, beautiful tea bushes following the lay of the undulated hills. You know, in China, it tends to be more a few dozen bushes here, a few dozen bushes over there, a few dozen bushes over here. They're kind of spread out through the mountains. So depending upon what kind of terrain you have and how old the tea bushes are and how long the garden's been established, you just don't get very much yield. You know, tea bushes need to be 7, 8, 9 years old before they do much. So the folks in California that I know are doing this, you know, their plants were just planted in the ground 2 years ago. So it's going to be a while until they have a yield. And, you know, if they decide at some point to go further with it, then they're going to have to plant more plants. So it's going to be even longer until there's any kind of sizable yield. So I think it's a matter of the interest in tea kind of sneaking up on the needs of planting and trying to actually create a viable, harvestable tea garden.
Yeah, it'll take a lot of patience.
Yes, let's
take a caller, Justin from Appleton. Hi, Justin.
Hi, it's a great show. I love tea.
Good, I like that.
I actually use tea as a part of my brewing process for making mead. I started brewing Kaiser meads 10, 15 years ago for my grandfather's recipe, and I loved green tea. I happened to have a friend in Waupaca who actually has a greenhouse full of it, and in order to brew it, I have to cold press it, and so 1 gallon of tea to 1 gallon of apple cider to, you know, like 5 pounds of honey per gallon I'm brewing, and it really, I love it for the antioxidants that it brings in, plus I'm using buckwheat honey, so that's full of antioxidants, so it's a really good, beneficial drink that I drink like once a day.
So mead is honey wine, Mary Lou. What do we know about mead?
From my point of view, just about that. You know, I know as little about mead as I do about kombucha. I know that it, you know, goes back to the days of Chaucer. It's a very old English, maybe Irish and Scottish as well, beverage. We have a company here in our area that has set up a meadery. I don't think that they're using tea, though. That's interesting. I'm going to have to go to the store and see what they're doing. What's great about our world right now is that people are so curious about our world, and there's so much availability of information about other cultures and other foods and other drinks and what they're doing and how they're doing it, that there's this, you know, explosion of interest in all manner of how to use tea. I find it really fascinating. I'm a little old-fashioned. I'm a little slow on the upswing of some of these things because we're so, you know, focused on the actual leaf itself. But I have to admit, I have heard of kombucha, but I'm really not familiar with tea mead. So I think that's exciting.
Well, Mary Lou, we're also scratching our heads on this one. Paula on Facebook says her favorite is gunpowder green with dried mint from her garden with a little honey. What is gunpowder green?
Gunpowder green is one of the early, according to historical information, gunpowder green is one of the first of the green teas produced in China, exported to the West in the 17th, early 18th century. It's a rolled tea. It's made from a certain size leaf from a certain plucking at a certain season of the spring. So it's you need a certain size leaf, a large leaf, so that it can be rolled and keep that ball shape. It's a rolled green tea, fairly strong in flavor, very popular in England. I mentioned earlier ago that for years and years we could only get our hands on certain teas. We didn't have much that was terribly exciting. And I don't mean to minimize the teas that we had then, but we just didn't have the selection we have now. But one of the teas that we've always sold is gunpowder. It's just always been an import into the United States and something very popular in England. So it's a rolled tea. It often is served with mint. The honey or the lemon is optional per tea drinker. But, yeah, very, very old, famous green tea, meant to emulate gunpowder pellets, I think.
Ah, there you go. Okay. So what trends are you seeing out there in the tea business, in the tea world? What are you seeing that's growing in interest?
Well, it's certainly not true for every tea drinker, but for a lot of folks, you know, a lot of our customers, we're seeing things that mimic trends in the food world. For example, we're seeing a lot of interest in authenticity. People want to know how this particular Chinese green tea was made. You know, they don't want any fairy tales behind it. They don't want to find out later it was a blend of this, that, and the other thing. They really want to find out, like, what it is and what it means. So they want the authentic thing, the real thing. Transparency and source information. You know, we get a lot of questions about, well, where does your tea come from? Exactly. So, you know, whereas we used to say, well, this tea is from China, you know, now we say, well, this tea is from Fujian province in China, eastern China, it's from this region, it's from this village area. You know, if we know the name of the producer, we can include that. So we try to be very specific, as specific as we can, about where the tea is from, because this is the kind of information, the kind of dialogue that's happening today. It's happening with foods, it's happening with other beverages. So
happening, you know, around coffee as well.
Right, exactly. Coffee, chocolate. So people want to know. So that's important. People also want to know, you know, it used to be the old information was what country is it from and what kind of tea is it. Now people want to know what season is it from. Is this a spring tea? Is this a fall tea? Is this a winter tea? Because all of those pluckings exist. So, you know, we get into that with customers as to what season it comes from. And not every tea vendor does this because not every tea vendor can. You know, we can because our tea is so directly sourced. People want to know if things are organic. They want to know about the growing environment. Is it a mountain-grown tea? Is it a valley-grown tea? Does it come from a tea forest? Does it come from newly planted tea gardens? Does it come from old tea trees? Is it a commercial tea, you know, agribusiness tea, or is it something that's traditionally made by hand by, you know, people in a village? The other thing that we see is that people are getting into, particularly for Asian tea, the spiritual element of Asian tea. A lot of tea in Asia is drunk as we drink it. It's drunk for caffeine. It's drunk for refreshment. It's drunk for just that lovely lift it gives you for the social benefits of sitting around with friends and family and enjoying tea. But it's also drunk oftentimes alone with a spiritual element of poetry reading or doing some calligraphy or just admiring a scroll painting on your wall. There's also a meditative element of tea drinking. For some people, they meditate, they do yoga, drink a little tea before, after, in between. And then we also find, too, that as cultural awareness grows about how tea is prepared and drunk in these tea-producing countries, you know, a lot of folks want to try those methodologies, which often require a different kind of teapot and a different way of doing it. Small amounts of tea, way less water than we use in the West, way more leaf than we use in the West. So different ratio of water to tea, different teapot. You know, a lot of people want to experiment with that. So,
and so if you're new to tea and you really want to start making it a part of your routine, a part of your life, where should you start if you're trying to grow your interest in tea?
I think if you can afford to buy yourself a small teapot, that's so much better than using tea bags. So a small teapot, about 15, 18 ounces, you don't have to spend a huge amount of money. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It just has to be. So a teapot in that size range, I would start with whatever tea you think you like. What are you drinking now? Are you drinking now the strongest coffee you can get your hands on? Are you drinking very mild coffee with a lot of milk and sugar? If you're drinking something really strong, you know, you might want to just move on over to black tea. If you're drinking a really light coffee now, move over to, you know, start with green or white. But we always suggest to people that they try all the different classes of tea. Try something from each of those groups just to see what they're like. Don't go into it with a preconceived notion. Keep an open mind. If you don't like it, that's okay. It's as important to learn what you don't like as it is what you do like. So you can only learn about wine, about cheese, about cigars, about chocolate, all of these wonderful things that people need to learn a little bit about in order to make wise choices in the marketplace. Requires some trial and error.
Sample it.
Exactly. And if you don't like it, that's okay. Just try something else.
Mary Lou, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. I love talking about tea. A happy new year to everybody.
Happy new year. Mary Lou Heiss is the owner of the tea import business Tea Trekker. She's the author of two books on tea, including The Story of Tea, A Cultural History and Drinking Guide. We can continue our conversation on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Post your favorite tea and when and why you drink it. Thanks to producer Brianne Chasso for this tea-rific segment. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, filling in for Joy this hour in the Joy Cardine Show. And Joy is here, caffeinated with teas, kissing cousin coffee, no matter your beverage. Hope you can stick around on the Ideas Network.